Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 7th Aardvark Accessibility Podcast. In this week's video, we're going to go over the auditing process and what that looks like in more detail. I'm your host, Natalie G. I'm an accessibility novice, learning things along the way. And here with me today is...
Natalie MacLees, accessibility expert.
Yes, thank you for joining me, Natalie. And today's episode, we're going to start off with, what does a typical auditing process look like? Would you care to share with us?
All right, so we sit down and you're going to audit a website. Usually the first thing that you do is run automated tests. Those are only going to catch about 30% of the issues, but that's 30% of the issues you don't have to find manually, so it can be really helpful. There's all different kinds of automatic scanners out there. WebAIM makes Wave. There's an Axe browser add-on from DQ. And of course, there's Aardvark, which will do the automated scanning for you and find automatic issues. Once you've gone through and run the automated issues, usually there's some that you have to check because robots can't always say for sure if it's an issue or not. So most automated scanners will flag some things to say, oh, this needs to be checked manually. I'm not really sure if it's an issue or yet or not. And then you can, decide, yes, this is an issue or no, it's not. Once you've done that, then you start the manual testing process, which is where most of the time goes for an audit. And you just start manually using the website and looking for places where there are accessibility issues. You want to try using the website with just the keyboard. So you put your mouse on the other side of the room and see if you can navigate through and can you do everything that's available with just a keyboard. And then you would also want to test with at least one screen reader as well and make sure that you can get through the page with a screen reader. And usually up front, you would define what different platforms you're going to test on with your client. So you would say up front, oh, I'm going to test with Safari and VoiceOver on a Mac. Or you might say, oh, I'm going to test with TalkBack on an Android phone. So because you have to think about mobile devices and tablets and things like that as well. So you would work out ahead of time with your client what technologies am I actually going to test with? And then you just start working through the page and finding all the different kinds of issues that way.
Can we backtrack a little bit? You mentioned that the automated scans only bring out 30% of the issues. What is the reason behind that?
Not all of them are easily recognized by technology at this point. Some of them require an actual human to do the test. We'll see what happens with AI in the next few years. So far, I haven't seen any amazing stellar AI solutions for accessibility. But for right now, there are things that a human has to look at. So a good example is a robot can tell pretty easily if an image has alternative text on it or not. That's easy to check. Is there a string there or isn't there? But what a robot can't really tell is that alternative text correct? Is it complete? Is it comprehensive? Does it describe the image correctly? Does it describe the context of the image correctly? A robot can't really decide that. So somebody has to look at that right now to decide that.
Gotcha. And then for manual testing, you have to go into the web page and actually use it.
Yeah.
In my head, I thought you had a WCAG checklist and you kind of went through each rule. Is that not how it works at all?
You can definitely use a checklist as guidance to make sure that you don't forget to test for something. But it can be a little bit difficult to check for just one rule at a time as you're going through. Because then, if you have a checklist of 50 things, you're going through the web page 50 times to check for every one of those issues. And some of them would be pretty simple and quick to check for. So if it's a page with one video on it, it's pretty easy to check, does this video have captions or not? If it's a page with 50 videos on it, that's going to take a lot more time. And you probably just want to be doing multiple checks kind of at the same time on each pass through the site. You would want to be checking kind of multiple things. But yeah, there is definitely like a checklist that you work from of like, oh, I have to remember to check if there's alt text. I need to remember to check color contrast. I need to remember to check if it works with a keyboard, et cetera, et cetera. But you kind of do multiple tests at the same time, if that makes sense.
I see. So when do the WCAG guidelines or success criterion come into play as you're testing?
Pretty much the whole time. I wouldn't say, I'd be pretty surprised if anybody sat down with just a list of the WCAG success criteria and tried to use that as their checklist. I think a lot of accessibility professionals have developed their own checklist to make sure that they're kind of hitting all of those different success criteria. Some of them, it makes sense to test together because some of them are very closely related, and other ones, it makes sense to test separately. So usually there's like a separate list that somebody has made, or, you know, maybe they're using a one that somebody has put out in the public domain that would walk you through making sure that you are hitting all of those success criteria in your testing. But like I said, you're probably working on multiple items on the checklist at the same time on each pass through the page.
Mm-hmm. And when an auditor is going through the, like testing through the page, the skills come in when they're like, oh, I'm testing this video. Like it has to be one of these that we're failing.
Yeah, you have to know what the rules are. So if I'm testing a form, for example, I have to know that for a form field, it has to have a label. It has to be correctly marked up for what type of input it is. It has to have, if it's a required field, that has to be marked programmatically in some way. You can't just put an asterisk in the label. You actually have to programmatically mark that field as required. I have to test if there's some kind of error that can happen, right? If it's a required field and I leave it empty, or if it's a phone number field and I type letters in it, right? If there's some kind of error that can happen, well, now I have to test, are the error messages, do they show up? Number one. Number two, are they actually helpful? Do they tell me what's wrong and how to fix it? Because I'm sure we've all had that experience of just, something went wrong. And you have no idea what it is or what the problem is. So the error messages do have to be helpful. They have to say, oh, your phone number can't contain letters, for example. And then they also have to be programmatically associated with a form field. So you have to know that those are all the things that you have to check, and you have to know which success criteria those map to. Like, which one is it failing if any one of those things is missing?
Right. So a lot of practice, a lot of repetition.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so now I kind of get why just getting your certification is not going to be enough.
Yeah, there is a lot of practice to actually digging through a page and finding all the issues. It's easy to miss some that are a little bit more subtle.
Right. And so manual testing, most of it is just literally manual testing, like you going through the page and manually checking everything.
Yeah, using every little thing on the page, every button, every link, every little interactive thing, using it just like a user would. Yeah, and seeing what barriers you run into.
And you mentioned the keyboard navigation, screen reader. Is there any other like perspective of testing that you have to involve too?
Most of the time, if you can cover screen reader and keyboard, that covers almost every use case. But if you have the budget, it's always a good idea to actually hire users with disabilities to also test the site. If you are not a disabled user yourself, there are a lot of accessibility professionals who are disabled. But of course, every person with disabilities is unique. So everybody is different. So it's not like you can hire one person and say, oh, well, this person could use the site, so it must work for everybody. There's a whole spectrum of different challenges that people might run into using a website. So ideally, you would want to hire a few different people and have them work through the site and see what different kinds of barriers they might run into in using the site.
In a previous episode, you mentioned a lot of accessibility professionals for larger sites, they usually get hired on retainer. Do users with disabilities also get hired on retainer? Is that a thing?
It would be really nice if it was, but not to my knowledge. I think there are a handful of organizations that we'll probably talk about in a future episode, businesses and nonprofit organizations that will coordinate with you to help you hire people to do testing, but it's usually just on a one-off kind of basis where, I think before the pandemic, a lot of times they were actually going into an office to test, and they would, you know, schedule things so that they'd have somebody come in and test like four different websites one morning, for example. I think now a lot of it is done remotely, which is even better because, of course, there's a lot of people with mobility issues and things where going into an office wouldn't be the most convenient. But being able to do that remotely is really helpful. But yeah, you can work with one of those organizations to hire somebody just on a one-off basis. And they handle like the recruiting and the recording of the test and helping you get the test set up and all of that.
I see. So there's streamlined ways. You don't just have to go on like Facebook Marketplace.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And also the other thing that's helpful is that it's testers who are trained, right, in how to test a website and not just random user testing. But random user testing can be helpful too, because sometimes if you're using only users who have been trained, they're really tech savvy and they don't really represent your average user on your site. But now we're kind of getting into more of like user testing and user experience, but that's where it starts to overlap with accessibility.
Yes, gotcha. And then also for manual testing, a lot of success criterion seem to affect like tablet and mobile views. Is that also part of the auditing process?
Yeah. So you would want to work that out. Like if you're hiring somebody to do an audit, or if you're the one being hired to do an audit, before you get started, you would want to work out what devices are you going to use? Which browsers are you going to use? And of course, the more the better, but that impacts the budget and the timeline for the project. So you have to find a good balance between what a client can afford to do and, you know, perfection, which would be testing every single browser, every single screen reader, every single device, right? It's not very practical. It's not a very pragmatic approach to it, but you could figure out a small sample of maybe two or three different devices and, you know, screen reader pairs that are going to find most of the issues and are going to uncover the most number of things for, you know, an affordable and more realistic budget.
Okay. What do you think are the most commonly used combinations then?
For screen readers, Safari pairs best with VoiceOver. So each one has its own browser that it works the best with. NVDA works best with Firefox. And then the JAWS screen reader works best with Microsoft Edge. And then on mobile devices, the screen readers are built in. So on an iOS device, you just have VoiceOver, which is the same one that's built into Mac desktop computers and tablets and phones. It's all the same thing. Android devices have a screen reader called TalkBack that works very similarly. That's built right into the OS. So you would want to test with as many different variations as you can in there.
I see. Do you guys use like Google Analytics to be like, okay, most of your traffic is Chrome, so we're going to have to go with this one?
Yeah, that can using analytics data like that can definitely be helpful in figuring out like what are most of the users to the site using, and also which content are most of the users visiting, because you probably don't want to spend a lot of time, you know, doing an audit on a page that only gets a tiny percentage of traffic when you have other pages that get lots and lots of traffic.
Yeah. So that's another question. Do you prioritize the pages?
Yeah, I would definitely, I would always look at most important pages of the site, right, which would always be the home page. And then important pages depend on what kind of site it is. If it's a site to be hired for services of some kind, like a web design agency, for example, would say probably their contact page would be another important page, right? You'd want to make sure people could get in touch with you. On an e-commerce site, it would be all the cart pages would be important pages because you want to really make sure that if people are interested enough to put something in their cart that they can go through and check out and actually get that item at the end. So most important pages, you can also look at the highest traffic pages, what gets the most information. And you could also start with pages that are most likely to be problematic. So pages that have forms, pages that have interactive elements, things like that, you might want to look at those first.
Gotcha. And then I know a lot of sites use templates. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, an e-commerce site, like if you go through one product page, do you have to go through all of the product pages?
No, especially if there's like 10,000 product pages, you don't want to go through all of those. That would make an audit take a really long time and be really, really expensive. So you would want to pick a random sample of products to go through. And if you have different types of products, so if I had a store that sold t-shirts and books, for example, I would want to make sure in my random sample I had a t-shirt and a book, because if I'm buying a t-shirt, I'm going to have color choices, I'm going to have size choices, that are, those controls aren't going to show up on a book, right? And if I'm buying a book, maybe I have a choice of hardcover or paperback or an ebook, and that, you know, those controls aren't going to show up on a t-shirt. So you want to make sure, you want to think about all the different conditional things that might show up on different products and make sure that you're getting a sample so that you're covering as many of those different conditional situations as you can.
Mm-hmm. And probably just give the client like a checklist so they don't accidentally break something within those templates, right?
Yeah, you need to be really careful when you're editing a template that's going to impact, you know, 10,000 products across a site, because if you introduce an accessibility issue, now you have 10,000 accessibility issues.
Mm-hmm. But even in like the individual pages too, right? Like if you are using a template and just putting content in those templates, you can still break accessibility guidelines.
Yeah, you could put in an image and not put alt text. You could use bad link text. There's all different kinds of things that you could do just doing content. Yeah.
Right. So a checklist, and you only have to check the template. All right. What kind of issues come up during the manual testing?
Like the most common issues?
Yeah, give us just like a little taster. I'll give us a little sample platter just to give the audience a taste of the type of stuff that you look for during the audit.
Sure. Yeah, we've already mentioned a few things. So alternative text on non-text content, which is images, video, and audio. So just making sure that there's alt text on images, that there's captions on videos, that there's audio, you know, the text transcriptions of an audio file, for example. So making sure all of those are in there. Making sure that there's enough color contrast on things. So you can't put white text on a pale blue background because that's not enough contrast. So that's a really common issue that people will have, you know, a really light color text on a light color background or vice versa with dark colors. Getting the headings in the incorrect order. So skipping from an H1 to an H5, for example, on the page, or using all H1s and nothing else, or using headings just for text that you want to be large instead of something that's actually a heading. So those kinds of things. It's really common for things to not work with just the keyboard, which is why that's an important test that we do. You should be able to get through any form or any website with just a keyboard and be able to fill out forms, be able to check out with a cart without touching your mouse. Making sure that things work with screen readers, that everything has an accessible name that gets read out so that a screen reader doesn't just say button. What does the button do? I have no idea. The button should say a button to submit a form or a button to show an image in a light box or, you know, whatever it happens to be. It should be really clear what different controls do. And the same thing for form fields. You don't want to have a screen reader just say input. You want to know, what am I filling in? My name, my email, my address, my favorite animal? Like, what are you asking me? So you want that to be really clear. So those are the most common things that you find across the internet.
And lastly, how do you write down an issue? What information is included?
So you want to include where you found the issue, so that when somebody is coming back to fix it later, they know where to find it. You want to put some information about the issue, like which WCAG rule is this violating? How is it violating it? And then a recommended fix, like how could we fix this? And then any other little notes that you might have. Sometimes there's more than one fix, and so you might say, well, this would be the best way to fix it, but if that's not possible, maybe you could do this or this instead. So you want to have all of that information documented, so when somebody comes back later to do remediation and actually fix those issues, it's really clear where the issue is and what the issue is and how to fix it.
If there's multiple instances on the same page, traditionally, how do you differentiate them?
So you mean like different places on the page where there's not enough color contrast?
Yeah, how do you specify?
Yeah, you have to get really specific about, oh, it's the link that's in the section that says, contact us. The third link doesn't have enough color contrast. So you do have to get really specific about those kinds of things. Or you could look at using Aardvark, which would let you just record. You just click on an item and say, this item has an accessibility issue. Say what the accessibility issue is. And then when somebody comes back to remediate the issue, there's a little marker that shows up right on the page and they can see exactly where the issue is. It is right on the element that had the issue.
Yes. So traditionally, it does take a long time to fill out.
It can be time consuming to fill in all that information line by line by line for every single issue. Yeah.
But there's a solution to that.
Yeah, Aardvark is really helpful for that. Every time I was recording issues, I was just thinking, this is bananas, that this is so difficult to do. And so many people are doing this all around the world. That was the main inspiration, I guess, for building Aardvark, is I just felt like there had to be a faster and easier way to do it. So you just click on an element, you say, it's missing alt text, and it will automatically say, oh, that's WCAG 1.1.1. And here are the recommended solutions. You can just choose one. You can add some extra notes on it if you need to and click submit. And that's it. You don't have to do anything else. It all gets filled in for you and it's all correct and accurate and it's easy and fast to do.
Yes. You don't have to go into your spreadsheet row, column 5, row B. the link is not right in section with heading.
Yes. Yes. And then you don't have to have a developer saying, I'm confused. Where is this issue? I don't see it. I don't understand where you're saying this issue is. Because now they can see exactly where it is on the page.
And so with that, we invite you guys
to try Aardvark. You can go to aardvarkaccessibility.com, add your homepage for free, get access to all of our tools on your homepage. And give it a try. Run the automated scan. Try to record a manual issue. Try it out.
Yes. So With that, that's the end of episode 6. No, 7.
7.
No, 6. I messed up the intro then.
No, you said 7.
I did.
You did.
Okay, episode 7 of the Aardvark Accessibility Podcast. Thank you for joining us today. And we're going to end with a pose, as we always do. For our own selfish reasons. This week, I want to do this. Pretend you're holding a wand.
Okay.
And I will edit the wand.
Oh, I can't wait to see this.
Okay.
Is this like wands up?
Do it this way.
This way?
And then that way we're like doing it to the title.
Like this. Oh, this way?
Yeah, like that.
Okay.
Expecto Patronum! All right, give us a Harry Potter spell. We're big Harry Potter fans.
Yeah, we are. What do you want? Alohomora!
There you go.
Wingardium Leviosa! It's Leviosa, not Leviosa.
All right, and with that, we're gonna cut.